And this is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep, here with local and statewide news. During a press briefing this morning, members of the 2025 Juneau Glacial Lake Outburst Flood Joint Information Center provided status updates on flood recovery efforts in the Mendenhall Valley. The initial damage assessment included more than 700 homes in the area affected by flooding. 16 homes saw a relatively small amount of water in a garage or crawl space, and another 25 homes saw a minor amount of damage extending into living space. 6 homes saw major damage. Of those, only one was within the area protected by the city's HESCO barrier. The rest are located on View Drive, which is not protected by the barrier. Resources for residents in need of assistance are available via the recovery hotline. That number is 1-844-445-7131. Residents can apply for state individual assistance online at ready.alaska.gov. The deadline to apply is October 14th. According to the city's website, crews will make a first round of debris collection from flood-impacted neighborhoods on View Drive, Marion Drive, Meander Way, and Meadow Lane starting Monday morning. City staff are continuing to assess damage to the HESCO barrier. Several areas saw debris strikes, including a 15-foot section of the barrier by Diamond Park Fieldhouse that was most likely taken out by a tree. And Back Loop Bridge remains closed for the time being. The Alaska Department of Transportation says a section of the bridge was destroyed. Crews are starting repair work tomorrow, but they do not have a timeline for when the bridge will reopen. The temporary levee Juneau built this year spared hundreds of homes in Mendenhall Valley from catastrophic flooding. The city reported today that nearly 50 homes flooded, but most of the damage was minor, except for View Drive, a street unprotected by the city's levee. Homes there got hit harder by this glacial outburst flood than ever before. Now, as residents there dry out, they're mulling over a federal buyout program to leave the street for good. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
A loud generator is pumping water from Don Habiger's house at the end of View Drive.
Obviously, if you look closely, you can see that house did flood, and so we have recovery yet once again.
He tried to avoid that. He and his neighbors paid thousands to build a colossal berm over the past month in a last-ditch effort to save their homes ahead of the glacial outburst flood. It failed. Water leaked through and rose about 20 inches into Habiger's ground floor, higher than the record-breaking flood last year. He'd put his faith in the berm, so he didn't take backup measures, like putting up sandbags or moving his furniture to the second story.
There's somewhat of a numbing effect in your mind after one of these events, and it's difficult to get on to the next day or the next day. And so I'm just trying to get through today.
Volunteers are helping him and his wife tear out wet insulation and dry what can be salvaged from their flooded family room. At this point, the Habigers see two possible paths forward: fight the flood again next year, or cut their losses and move away. They're not sure which path they'll take. View Drive is a dead-end street in Mendenhall Valley, surrounded on three sides by Mendenhall River. Some properties here have flooded for more than a decade, but the past 3 years have been catastrophic. That's because outburst floods have grown bigger as Suicide Basin has expanded to hold more water, and the city's temporary levee didn't extend to this street. Scientists don't yet know how big the floods could get, and staff at the Army Corps of Engineers say a long-term solution that would protect the entire valley, including View Drive, is years away. Brett Nelson is Alaska's conservation engineer at the Natural Resources Conservation Service. That's the federal agency in charge of a recovery buyout program, which pays people to move out of natural disaster zones. In July, he met with city staff and some residents of View Drive to explain how the program works to purchase homes, demolish them, and transform the land into a park.
People need a little time to mull the situation over, and that was basically the intent of that initial meeting.
Nelson estimates the total project could cost somewhere between $18 and $20 million, assuming every View Drive homeowner decides to leave. But the program is voluntary. Some people may choose to stay. Right now, the agency is in the process of appraising the 20 properties on the street. Nelson says that process is a bit complicated.
The appraisals of these properties there's two options. They can either be done based on the value, like right now, today, the day the appraisal is being done, or they can be appraised as of the day before last year's Yokolup. The catch is all the properties have to go the same direction.
The agency has the final say over how homes are appraised, but Nelson says they want to respect residents' wishes. That appraisal decision will affect the overall price tag of the project, since homes are worth more before they've been damaged multiple times. If the buyout moves forward, Nelson says the cost would be split, 75% federal government, 25% local sponsor. The Juneau Assembly will have to vote on whether to sponsor the project. Elizabeth Figgis lives on View Drive and is drying out after a third year of major flooding in a row. She sees the buyout program as her best option since the city hasn't made plans to protect her street. But she has questions at this early stage in the process.
Are we going to be assessed at like way below what we would expect or need even to like pay off our mortgage and move on?
And she says it's important to compare the cost of turning the street into parkland with the cost to protect it somehow. City staff say they haven't done an official assessment of what it would take to protect View Drive. Several fans are blowing in Douglas Smith's ground floor bedroom, where a layer of fine gray silt covers the floor after floodwaters breached the height of the aluminum siding he'd installed. He says that he loves his community in Juneau and planned to spend the rest of his life here. Now, he's thinking of taking a buyout and moving somewhere in the lower 48.
At this point, if that works, we'll probably take it. It's probably our best option, because there doesn't appear to be an option for protecting the house. And, you know, so what else are we going to do?
Difficult decisions for View Drive residents and the Juneau Assembly are expected in the coming months. Nelson says that if the buyout moves forward, the process would take around a year. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
This week, two of the 16 felony sexual assault charges against former Juneau chiropractor Jeffrey Foltz were declared mistrial. But the trial continues. He still faces 14 counts of assault and harassment. The jury heard from Foltz's former colleagues at Search. KTOO's Yvonne Kremri reports from the courtroom.
Good morning. We're on record in 1JU 21410, State of Alaska versus Jeffrey Foltz. The defendant and counsel are present.
Friday marked the end of the third week of a sexual assault trial against former Search chiropractor Jeffrey Foltz, who stands accused of abusing patients in Juneau between 2014 and 2020. Presiding Judge Larry Wolford declared a mistrial Wednesday for two of the 16 sexual assault and harassment charges. Foltz will continue to stand trial for the remaining 14 charges. The mistrial happened because a witness testified that she'd experienced misconduct from Foltz beyond what she'd previously testified on record. Wolford ruled that the state prosecutors withheld information from the court and Foltz's attorneys, which then came up in the witness's testimony in front of jurors. The jurors have been told to disregard that witness testimony. Foltz's defense attorney, James Christie, says the prosecutors intentionally withheld the witness's disclosure.
We are entitled to have all of the evidence that is in the state's possession ahead of time. There's no question about that.
Prosecutor Kristen Tendy said she thinks Wolford's ruling is assuming that the prosecutors had bad intentions.
The state disagrees with the characterization of the bad faith analysis that the judge conducted.
The charges can be retried if state prosecutors choose to pursue them again. Tendy said they are still deciding how to move forward with these charges. This week, the court also heard from two people who've been mentioned a lot in the trial so far. Two medical providers that worked with Jeffrey Foltz in Search's physical therapy department at the time of the alleged crimes. The women accusing Foltz of sexual assault repeatedly compared Foltz's treatment, the amount of touching, the places he touched, and the way he encouraged them to take their clothes off, with the treatment they received from these two providers. Emily Haskell is a physical therapist who worked in Search's physical therapy department. The prosecution asked how she approaches patients with a history of sexual trauma, something the alleged victims told Foltz they'd experienced.
I think, especially if someone has had experienced sexual or interpersonal trauma, I think I was a lot more cautious with if I was going to touch them, probably a lot more cautious with, like, asking them to, you know, pull their shirt down to look at their shoulder or pull their pant leg up or something like that.
Haskell said she doesn't give massages to patients in the course of her physical therapy treatment.
Because it really is not within the scope of practice of physical therapy. I'm trying to find like dysfunctional or painful spots in muscles, sometimes a whole muscle itself. But I think of massage therapy as like a more broad and less direct approach to managing muscle tension.
A massage therapist with Search, Amanda James, also worked with some of Foltz's patients. Foltz's defense asked James if any of the alleged victims she treated complained to her about their treatment with Foltz. She testified that they did not. The trial was scheduled through Friday, but it's continuing into another week. The state has called about 24 witnesses. Each alleged victim, partners of complainants, medical experts, and one Juneau police detective. The state rested its case Friday. And the defense began calling its witnesses on Friday. The trial is expected to wrap up at the end of next week. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.
And Haines and Skagway residents have been dealing with weak or zero cell service for several days this week. At least two carriers, AT&T and Verizon, say the outage is due to Juneau's glacial outburst flood. The service interruptions have affected AT&T, GCI, Verizon, and Visible, according to Upper Lynn Canal residents. Among them is Garrett Shively. He lives in Haines and as of Friday morning hadn't had cell service since early Wednesday. He uses Visible, which piggybacks off Verizon's network.
Since then, I just really haven't had signal at all. I spent probably 2 hours on the chat with them because I thought it was my phone that was broken, and I don't have Wi-Fi. I use my phone as a personal hotspot at my house.
A GCI user commented on a Haines community Facebook page that they have had, quote, horrible service. Verizon users in both communities seem to have some issue, but it's not some service, but it's not great. In Skagway, AT&T users seem to be having the most issues. Skagway resident Julene Miles says she spent hours communicating with AT&T on Friday. According to screenshots shared with KHNS, a customer service representative said the company plans to have service restored by August 28th. An AT&T spokesperson said in an email exchange earlier this week that service disruptions were related to flooding in Juneau and a fiber cut by a third-party contractor. She said the network is working to restore service as quickly as possible, but did not provide a specific timeline for repairs. A Verizon spokesperson also said severe flooding caused a service interruption and that the company has enabled roaming on a partner network while repairs are in progress. Meanwhile, a GCI spokesperson said that testing indicates the company's sites in Haines and Skagway are functioning normally. Visible could not be reached for comment. And the Juneau School District opened its doors today for the first day of school. Despite a one-day delay for most students, district staff reported it was a relatively normal first day of school. KTOO has more.
Good morning, Benton Hall River, and happy first day of school on a Friday.
Mendenhall River Community School Principal Eric Velarde welcomed students and families over the loudspeaker Friday morning. Students filed in with their families and made their way to class. But there was a small difference. The school year began a day later this year following a record-breaking Glacial Lake outburst flood. And Velarde says it was a relatively normal first day of school.
We are looking at full staffing, and we have a school that's standing after the recent flooding. We're starting on Pizza Friday, and it smiles all the way around.
The district said in an email the only damage that occurred was some fencing near Back Loop Bridge, which remained closed Friday due to damage from the flood. Students were excited for school, including third grader Vaughn Ward. He says he's looking forward to making new friends. Vaughn also says he didn't mind getting an extra day off to chill.
I rode my bike a bunch too.
Vaughn's mother, Kelsey Ward, says their home on Emily Way flooded during last year's outburst, but things changed a lot this time around thanks to the new flood barrier.
We were displaced from our home for, almost 7 months? And this year we stayed dry, so it's a different first year for us, for school, or first day for our kids and for us, so it's good.
Ward says she's worried about her son's class size. She hopes to be able to volunteer to support his teachers throughout the year. On the other side of Juneau, hundreds of students stepped out of cars and buses as they made their way into Juneau Douglas High School, Yada'at Kathleh. There, office staff handed out class schedules printed on bright pink paper. Ninth graders typically start school a day early to familiarize themselves with the campus, but that was canceled this year because of the flood. Principal Paula Kasperson says they're working to support the freshmen who lost a day to get used to the new space.
It's a big transition for our ninth grade students, so we're trying to be out, visible, helping direct traffic, calming kids when they're feeling a little anxious about not knowing where to go. Transitions are important and they can be really hard.
She says any students missing school because of the flood coordinated with the attendance office.
You you know, if kids are helping families for this first day, we'll get them here on Monday, hopefully.
Not all students started in Juneau today. The district's kindergarteners' first day is scheduled for this Tuesday. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep. And right now in Juneau, it's 66 degrees with light rain. And for tonight, sprinkles with rain are likely before 7 p.m. It's going to be mostly cloudy with a low around 56, a northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. And this weekend, there's rain in the forecast, mainly after 10 a.m. for tomorrow morning. This is KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.